All right, we're going to be beginning here with the new Masechta, Masechta Ketubot on Daf Bet Amud Aleph. The Masechta deals with three major topics. Ketubot is somewhat of a misnomer for the Masechta, but there are two stages in a marriage, as the Rambam lays out, that we have, first of all, Kiddushin or Erusin, which is the first step in marriage. The second step of marriage is Nisuin, and the Gemara and Ketubot deals with that. It's almost a little bit like Masechet Nisuin, as opposed to Kiddushin, which deals with the Kiddushin aspect of marriage. This deals with the Nisuin aspect of marriage. In addition to that, the middle of the Masechta deals with the issues of Ones and Mifateh, which are individuals who engage in with women improperly, and the penalties that are associated with those engagements, because they do have impact vis-a-vis the Ketubah. And the latter half of the Masechta deals with the actual obligations and conditions that are placed inside of the Ketubah. So that's a broader overview of Masechet Ketubot. In terms of the Ketubah itself, it is a machloket rishonim, but not just rishonim. The Gemara itself brings it up in three different places and mentions that there are nafkamina lo halacha between whether a Ketubah is derabanan or a Ketubah is deoraita. So the Gemara itself already entertains the possibility that Ketubah is sourced midrabanan, or Ketubah is sourced midoraita. The Gemara mentions it later on with the geis, which we're going to see coming up shortly, about when the husband claims petach patuach matzati, that I married a woman and she was not found to be a betula. Over there, the Gemara discusses that a nafkamina would be if Ketubah is midrabanan midoraita. Another nafkamina that the Gemara speaks about in other locations is the type of land that is used to fulfill the obligations of the Ketubah. If you think that Ketubah is Doraita, then you would have the right to collect that of Idit, the best of the property. If you think Ketubah is Dirabanan, then you would only be able to collect that of Ziborit, the lowest form or quality of property. The last case is all the way at the end of the Masechta on Daf Kuf Yud, which is really the latter part of the Masechta. The Gemarot about Eretz Yisrael and the Malot of living in Eretz Yisrael. Over there, the Gemara discusses when a person moves from outside of Eretz Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael, from Eretz Yisrael to outside, which currency governs with regards to the payment of the Ketubah. Over there, again, the Gemara says the Nafkamina between the Shittot over there is whether it's Ketubah is Derabanan or Ketubah is Deoraita. So the Gemara itself already has this issue raised as to whether Ketubah is Derabanan or Ketubah is Deoraita. Rashi and Chumash, in three different places, says that Ketubah is Deoraita. He mentions it by Abraham towards the tail end of his life when he talks about Ubnei Apilag Shim. Over there, Rashi quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is a major machloket about what the Girsa is in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. But Rashi says the difference between a woman with marriage and a woman who is a Pilegesh is Ketubah. Ketubah is the pivotal factor between them. And clearly there, Rashi thinks that Ketubah is Doraita because that creates the differentiation between Pilegesh and a married woman. In addition, Rashi, by the case of Shechem and Dinah, where Shechem says, Harbu alai mohar, that he should put a lot of mohar on me in order for me to keep Dinah. Over there, Rashi explains that mohar is the monies granted min haTorah in the Ketubah from a husband to a wife. And then again, Rashi in Parshat Mishpatim, with the case of Mifuteh, in the case where a man, when a person seduces a woman, over there again it talks about Mo'ar Betulot, and Rashi again claims that that has to do with the Ketubah, that is the monies that are designated for the woman min haTorah through the Ketubah. So Rashi in all three of those places seems to indicate that Ketubah is Doraita. In all three of those instances, the Ramban of the Torah argues on Rashi and says that's incorrect. The Ketubah is clearly Dirabanan, and Rashi's explanation is incorrect. In each of the locations, he gives reasons as to what he thinks the right pshat is or how to explain it. But he disagrees with Rashi in all three of those locations. In addition to the Ramban, the majority, the vast majority of Rishonim believe that Ketubah is midrabanan. There is a Tosafot in the Gemara and Sultan, Daf Chav Zayin, that says that Ketubah can't be drabanan, can't be doraita, must be that it's an asmachta. It's midrabanan, but it's an asmachta midoraita. The Tosafot takes this middle view, which is trying to bridge some of the gaps or the differences of why you would say it was Doraita or why you would say it's Dirabanan. And therefore he calls it an Asmachta, but it really is a creation Midirabanan. The Rambam is unclear what his position is. In every place that we just mentioned in the Gemara, where the Gemara notes Ketubah Doraita, Ketubah Midirabanan, the Rambam brings the Tzad, or the Nafkamina Tzad, that it's Ketubah Midirabanan. So seemingly the Rambam believes that Ketubah is Midirabanan. Although in the Koteret, when he deals with the Koteret of Hilchot Ishut, as well as in Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam mentions Ketubah as being one of the mitzvot. The Ramban in Sefer HaMitzvot takes the Rambam to task about Ketubah and says, how can he mention Ketubah? It might be that Nisuin is a mitzvah, but Ketubah has no mitzvah. I don't know why he would add in the word Ketubah. And therefore the Ramban again takes the Rambam to task. But the Rambam's unclear because it seems to indicate in some places that's Doraita. But in all the instances where you would have thought he would have to paskin like one day off, it's Doraita, he ends up paskin like the other day that it's Dirabanan. For that reason, the Rishonim Achronim who comment on the Rambam try to figure out what is the Rambam Shita, because it's unclear. Again, as I said before, the vast majority of Rishonim believe that Ketubah is Midirabanan. Therefore, Svaradim in their Ketubah do not mention the word Doraita and actually mention that chazilaychi midrabanan. The monies of the Ketubah that are ra'uy, that are proper for you, midrabanan. On the other hand, the Ashkenazi Ketubot have in them the line, which is a very difficult line. It's not clear why it was maintained. But there it says that the kesef, that the matayim kesef, that is ra'uy laychi midoraita, minatorah. So in the Ashkenazi Ketubot, they have this word that the monies are properly designated towards you, min haTorah. So because of that, there are many interpretations of what the word midoraita over there defines. The simplest reading is that Ketubah is doraita, and that's problematic because the majority of Rishonim believe that it is not doraita. It's actually interesting, the Rabbanut in Israel, in order to create a standardized Ketubah between Ashkenazim and the Sfaradim, leaves out the word Doraita, although there's still many Ashkenazim that get married with the standard Ashkenazi Ketubah that says in it, Chazilaychi Midoraita. So some of the Rishonim explain that Chazilaychi Midoraita, Midoraita is not modifying the Ketubah, but rather the monies themselves. And that can be on two levels. Either Midoraita, that the money used here has to be Kesef Tzuri, not Kesef Medina. We'll say that when we get to the Gemara in Kiddushin, as well as later on in the Gemara in Ketubot. But there are two different types of currencies. There's the currency of Tzuri, which is considered to be the standard when the Torah talks about a shekel, when the Torah talks about any types of monies, that's standard based on the kesef of Tzuri. On the other hand, there was kesef Medina, whose value was significantly lower than that of kesef Tzuri. The conversion rates are different depending on the time periods and the currency involved, 1 to 4, 1 to 8. There are different conversion rates, but it's a significantly cheaper currency than the currency midoraita. So some people say that the chazilaychi midoraita is referencing to the monies that the currency uses, the currency of Tzuri. Others suggest that it means the amount, because the amount of money that is in the Ketubah, here everybody agrees that for a betulah, it's 200 zuz, and for an almanah, it's 100 zuz. The 200 zuz that is in the Ketubah comes from what they call the Mohar Abtulot, which is defined by the cases of rape and seduction, by the penalties or the knas that is imposed at that time, that defines for us the level or the monies that are appropriate for a bitulah. Now everybody agrees that the Ketubah of an almanah is midirabanan. The question only comes up with the Ketubah of a bitulah, and here again we have that question of whether it's doraita or dirabanan. When we get to the sugyot, we'll discuss it again and point out these things. But again, the vast majority believe that Ketubah is midirabanan, and the chazilaychi midoraita could be a significant problem. There have been those that moved to try to eliminate it from the Ketubah because it just doesn't make sense to have it in there when most people believe that the Ketubah is not midoraita. Moving on from that, the obligations that are laid out by the Ketubah are very seemingly technical and monetary. And so the document of the Ketubah, if you were to look at it, would simply be a financial document. If that's the case, we have principles that are laid out, which is generally when it comes to contractual obligations, people enter into a contract, into an agreement, then the two parties can decide on what is found inside of the contract. It's a civil contract or any other social contract where people agree to do certain things. Each party can decide and then agree to what the matters that are considered or what is exchanged in the contract. So if that was true here, then you would say the same thing about the ketubah, that if it's a monetary document, then in that sense, the two parties should be able to agree about what is found in the ketubah, or what the obligations are on each side. As opposed to that, in the Torah, whenever you have a mitzvah in the Torah, you're not allowed to place conditions inside of mitzvot in the Torah, because you're not allowed to make a tnai, a mashak tuv Torah, and that's written in the Torah. But there are exceptions, or there's a machloka between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda with regards to monetary matters laid out by the Torah. When the Torah lays out monetary matters, are you allowed to create conditions within that? So for instance, with regards to Shomrim, when you have a Shomer, the Torah lays out the responsibilities of Shomrim. Can you agree to be a Shomer, Shomer Sechar, Shomer Chinam, on a condition that you're not bound by the rules of the Torah? You're bound by the agreement between the two parties. So that's a machloket, right? You can make a tnai, a mashe ketuv b'Torah, b'divrei mimonot. There's a sugya here in Ketubot, the main sugya is in Kiddushin as well. But the same question comes up with regards to ketubah. Are you allowed to place conditions inside of the ketubah or forfeit rights or things that are found in the ketubah? That would depend on whether you view the ketubah as being a monetary document or you view the ketubah as being something even bigger than that. Again, it also might matter as to whether you think the ketubah is derabanan or deoraita. In addition to that, the obligations that a husband has towards his wife, which are framed inside of the ketubah, are mentioned by an amaha ivriya. There in Parshat Mishpatim, it talks about the main obligations, which are she'er, ksut, rona, which is the obligations, the first two of which clearly obligations that are monetary in matter, ksut and mazon, which are obligations. Ona, there is a machloket in the Gemara as to what ona is, but assuming that ona is cohabitation, the rights of a woman to claim her physical rights in the marriage, over there you have two views in general about what those rights are. Some claim that those rights are similar to monetary rights, just like she has rights which are hana'a, that is monetary. She also has rights that are hana'a, which are hanataguf, and they're of the same genre of rights. But there are others, obviously, that view that the rights of ona are very different than the rights of she'er, ksut, where she'er and ksut are monetary matters, but ona is a matter that is beyond those monetary matters, and therefore there cannot be conditions placed on ona. Once you've done that, that does reflect very differently maybe on the ketubah, because then the obligations that are generated by the ketubah and she'er, ksut, and ona might not just be monetary obligations, it might be something more. In addition, the Gemara later on is going to discuss Shimon ben Shetach and his attempt to make the ketubah an effective document. The Gemara clearly mentions that the point of the ketubah is to protect the woman from being thrown out of the marriage, to protect her in the case of the death of her husband, or in the case of divorce, that she's just not left out on the street, that she has, first of all, an ability to support herself and a monetary means to continue her life, but beyond that, to prevent the husband from just divorcing the woman willy-nilly. And therefore, the ketubah goes through a number of iterations in terms of how they encumbered the property of the husband and how they set it up in order to engender this outcome. Now, that's one piece of the puzzle. The second piece of the puzzle is actually the beginning of the Mishnah here. The beginning of the Mishnah here, which talks about the day on which one gets married, talks about the choice of the day being the day before the courts meet, because the individual might find that his wife is not a betula, and we want him, when he's still angry, to get up in the morning and go to court and to speak about it and discuss the issue. So if you look at those two factors, it would give you a very unromantic view of marriage. Here you have ketubah, which, as Rashi says in his Tshuvot, is read in the marriage between Kiddushin and Nisuin in our marriages today in order to create a hefsek between the Kiddushin and the Nisuin for a very technical reason. We do it to create a hefsek. Interesting enough, you read a monetary document in between, which is a little strange. And also here, you're finding that the day of marriage that is picked is picked for the reason that we might find that the woman is not appropriate. She wasn't a Bdula, and we have to unwind the marriage. So if you look at those two factors, it makes it into a very technical exercise, makes it into a very unromantic exercise or view of marriage. I've heard in two different venues, I've heard from one of my Rebbeim, Rav Rosenzweig, who wanted to show that that's just not the case. And then over here, if you look very carefully, that the Torah and Chazal put a very high premium on certain aspects of marriage. And in doing so, it's actually a much more beautiful view of marriage, romantic view of marriage, and that even though these are seemingly technical, they have huge implications. And here, Tosafot already asks over here, why do we make such a big deal out of the fact that he finds that his wife is not a betula? We're going to see later on in the Gemara that his claim of Peta Patuach is not even such a strong claim, and so why do we worry about it at all? So Tosafot over here brings a number of answers to the question. The last answer he brings is the one that Rav Rosenzweig focused on. He says, Inami, hacha shelo teshev imo b'isur kol yamav, so that this woman will not remain with him b'isur all of his life. Chashu afilu liznut, af agav delo shchiach. Even though it's not a common occurrence, even though it's not something that happens all the time, nevertheless, Chazal did not want the marriage to get off on the wrong foot. A marriage, a Jewish marriage, is born out of Kedusha. It's the beginning of the marriage is so fundamental and so important to engendering a marriage that is strong and fulfills the vision of a Torah marriage, a marriage of Kedusha, of unity, of building, that if the marriage starts off on the wrong foot, if there's any questions or any problems in the beginning of the marriage, that is something that could unwind or could ruin the whole institution of marriage because it doesn't start off by this level of Kedusha or this aspect of Kedusha. That's actually part of what we say in terms of the Birkat Erusin that we make is Mekadesh Yisrael Ayidei Chupa VeKedushin. That there's a certain level of Kedusha that is engendered by Kedushin and Chupa. It's not just a technical mechanism for marriage, but it's a generation of Kedusha. It's a perspective on marriage. And he said the same thing with regards to Ketubah. If you look at Ketubah in that way, the Ketubah might be functioning in a very similar manner. The document of the Ketubah is not just a monetary document. The Ketubah is a way that Chazal set up the rights of the women and obviously the rights of the man as well within the marriage, but it sets up a framework by which the marriages won't be dissolved willy-nilly. It sets up a framework in which both parties will be secure and feel confident that the marriage is a place to be and a place of security and a place of safety, and therefore it allow for the infusion of Kedusha and the growth that is expected in a marriage to happen. And therefore the document of the Ketubah is not simply agreements and monetary agreements, but is a framework in which it allows the Kedusha to infuse the marriage. And if you take that view, then the aspects that we deal with in Ketubah, although they're technical, and as well as marriage here, take on a different meaning. Yes, they're technical. Yes, they seem to seemingly have no romantic side to them. But on the other hand, what they do create or engender is a framework and a mindset and a whole view of marriage that involves Kedusha and is much more ambitious than simply agreements between parties, but looks towards the ultimate goal of marriage, which is the Kedusha, the production, pru revu, of a new generation and a Mesorah that will take place that has to be done in an environment which is proper. Without that proper environment, none of this will grow. And if there are issues, those issues will fester and cause problems, both in the insecurity of the parties in the marriage, or if there are questions about the parties that came to the marriage. So all of these things need to be eliminated in order to create a platform in which the marriage is a marriage of Kedusha. In addition, he wanted to suggest that maybe that's exactly what the Rambam meant by having the mitzvah of Ketubah midoraita, but the aspects be midorabanan, which is conceptually Ketubah is midoraita. Somewhat along the lines of what Shaul said before, that Moab Tulot. The Torah does describe that there is a concept of Ketubah or value that is placed on Moab Tulot, and that concept exists. What Chazal did was take it and then explain how do we utilize that or how do we use that framework that's laid out in Midoraita to create or engender what the Torah wants. The Torah wants, and that's the knas that is associated with the mifuteh, with an ones, is that people have marriages and don't have these one-night stands. They don't have these improper relationships. How do we set that up? How do we create that? Well, the penalties are the way to do it in those cases. But in a normal marriage, it's to create a framework in which it's not just that, that there's a secure and safe environment in which the marriage can grow, and that is already set up min haTorah by the cases of ones and mifuteh, and therefore they extrapolated that, and Chazal built on that to create the framework of ketubah. And that might be what the Rambam is saying, that there is an idea that is pushed by the Torah of ketubah. The Torah doesn't define what ketubah is. That's what the Chachamim did. They define the aspects of ketubah, even though, again, the framework or the idea is already presented midoraita, and that would help explain that shita of the Rambam. All right, that will begin the Masechta, Masechet Ketubot. Second begins bitulah. Tosafot already asks, why doesn't it say ha bitulah with the ha yediyah? He says that Masechtot that reference a pasuk in the Torah will use a ha yediyah here, where we're not referencing a pasuk in the Torah, it lacks a ha yediyah, although he upends that with his own questions on that. Others discuss that when you talk about a particular person, like an ha'isha, that people know or are well known, then they use hey idea. Here by habitulah, it's not something that would have been obvious to people, and therefore it doesn't use the hey idea. But bitulah, you say the yom ha'rivi'i, gets married on the fourth day, which is today, Wednesday. We're starting out the Masechta. On Wednesday is the proper day to get married. Tosafot points out, the yom ha'rivi'i, it has to be during the daytime. We're afraid if they do it at nighttime, meaning that, or the yom ha'rivi'i, not Tuesday night, but Wednesday night, that there will be altercations in the negotiations of the ketubah, and the night will go by, and the marriage will not be consummated. So we start in the day to give us plenty of time to complete the whole process of marriage, and for them to be able to be together that night. V'almanah the yom chamishi, and almanah gets married on the Thursday. Shepa'amayim b'shabbat, batei dinim yoshvim ba'ayarot, because twice during the week, the batei dinim sit, v'yom ha'sheni uv'yom ha'chamishi, on Monday and on Thursday. Shimhaya lo tanat bitulim, because if he has a claim against this woman that she's not a bitulah, hayom ha'shkim the beit din, the next morning he'll get up and go to beit din. And as Rashi points out, this is one of the Eser Takanot of Ezra, that batei dinim should sit on Mondays and Thursdays in all the cities and all the villages, so that people could adjudicate their cases, both because that was yom ha'shuk, so that people were found there, as well as to give people the ability to, on a regular occurrence, deal with these issues. And also, we lane on Monday and Thursday, so people would come to the shuls to be at Minyan to hear the Kriyat HaTorah. A lot of reasons why, but the courts sit on Monday and Thursday. The Gemara obviously asked the question, if they sit on Monday and Thursday, why not get married on Sunday instead of Wednesday? But it's clear here that the Mishnah is saying you get married on Wednesday, so that after Wednesday night, if there's any problem, he'll get up right in the morning and go to court. Why? Well, he's still angry. We have to catch him in the emotional moment so that he goes to court and he deals with it. If we allow it to become placated, if we allow his anger to be assuaged, then he won't go to court. And it's a problem. Because if the woman had an extramarital affair while she was in Arusa, she's a surah to him. A surah midoraita. Not just a problem. It's a real problem where he may not live with her. And that's what Tosafot was saying before, that we have to have the marriage start on the right foot. So here, Rashi says, we want him to get up the next morning and go to the Beit Din immediately. Why do we want him to go to the Beit Din immediately? Well, the Gemara later on, Daf Tet, is going to tell us he has no claim. Even if he comes to the Beit Din and says, Petach Patuach Matzati, he doesn't have a claim because that's a fake sveka. Once a fake is, was she nenas, or was she a willing participant? Maybe she was raped while she was in Arusa, or was she a willing? Or, maybe it happened before she was in Arusa. In either case, that's a fake fake as to whether she is asura here, and he has no claim against her. So what does Rashi say? Rashi says, "Umutoch she'avod beitin yitbarer adavar." We'll get clarity on the matter because she had seakol. Because then the news will get out. Shema yavo edim, because then edim might show up. So Rashi says the whole purpose of this is to engender a birur, a clarification of the issue, because we want to get to the bottom of this. The claim of the individual has no bearing, but once he brings his claim to court, then it might bring other people in because it's a newsworthy item, and the other edim might come in and we'll solve the problem through the other edim. Yeah. Tosafot says he does not understand what Rashi's talking about. There is no claim over here. There's absolutely no claim. And why would you say that? There's a whole system set up for a person, a man, to come to court when he doesn't have any claim. So Tosafot says there are two people that do have a claim. The problem is for a Kohen. A Kohen does not have a Sfek Sfeka. A Kohen only has one Sfek. Because even if his wife was Nanas, he cannot stay married to her. And therefore, she's a Zonah. And he cannot stay married to her. So therefore, if the Kohen is only one Sfek, before Erusin or after Erusin, as well as a girl who was married off by her father when she was less than three, in that case, there's no before Erusin. There's only after Erusin, and there's one Sfek. In those two cases, there's a single Sfek. So Tosafot now says that the whole institution is for those two individuals because they have a Sfek, and because of that, they said Lo Plug, and they put everybody on Wednesday because of that Lo Plug. But now, if that's the case, you have a very interesting setup over here, which is that because of these two parties, they set up the entire system to follow those two parties. And that's what we saw before in the end of the Tosafot, who's trying to describe why we would worry about this issue at all. And he says, because even though it's Lo Shkiach, and even though these are far-fetched cases, we still want to have this taken care of. We want the marriage to get off on the right foot. So even though it's all these far-fetched situations, we want it to get off on the right foot. But there's also something very important between the Rashi and the Tosafot with regards to their view of Sfek Sveka. So many describe here the difference in Sfek Sveka. Sfek Sveka can be viewed in one of three ways. Why is a Sfek Sveka mutar, or why do we go to Kula? So there's one opinion that Sfek Sveka is the Kula, because a single Sfek, if you're dealing with the Torah law, is a Sfek Doraita. Sfek Sveka, already the Torah doesn't recognize, and becomes a Sfek Midrabanan. Since it's a Sfek Midrabanan, we go Likula. That's one way to view it. Another way to view Sfek Sveka is that it's dealing with one Sfek gives you a percentage or probability. When you reach down to a Sfek Sveka, now you become the miut, you become the minority, because the probabilities multiplied by each other generate a probability that is lower than the rove now, lower than 50-50, and therefore that's why we go to Kula by Sfek Sveka. There's another opinion which says that by Sfek Sveka, there is no late at the Sfek. When you have Sfek Sveka, there's no longer any issue anymore, because you don't have. A Sfek is something that requires investigation, that has questions. When you have a Sfek Sveka, there are those that, and Rav Soloveitchik was fond of saying this, that there is no late at the Sfek. And they want to argue that that is exactly the machloket here between Rashi and Tosafot. Rashi over here, who says the reason to come to Beit Din is because then we'll get a deem that will clarify for us, is because Rashi believes that by Sfek Sveka, there still is a Sfek. And when we have the option by a Sfek Sveka to be Mevarer, we have the option to check into it, we're going to opt for checking into it. There is a Sfek still. Okay, if we have no choice, we'll be Machria in a certain way. And therefore, Sfek Sveka, if we have to, we'll make a Achra. But if you think that Sfek Sveka is simply Achra, where I have the option to be Mevarer, I will always take the option to be Mevarer rather than be Machria. On the other hand, if you think that Sfek Sveka is a Kviyat HaMitziyut, and therefore we don't have to do anything more, then there's no reason to be Mevarer. Might be there's still a Sfek here, but it's a Sfek that generates a Mitziyut that I no longer have to deal with. On the other hand, Tosafot might believe that there is no Leidata Sfek here whatsoever. And when there's a Sfek Sveka, there's no Sfek. And therefore Tosafot can't understand why Rashi thinks there's a reason to go to Beit Din to clarify the issue. There's no Sfek here to clarify. And therefore Tosafot opts for putting in the women where there's only one Sfek. And that's the whole generation of this issue, is because of those women, not because of the women of Sfek Sveka. The Sfek Sveka is all Lo Plug. If it had been Sfek Sveka, according to Tosafot, we would have ignored it completely, because Sfek Sveka doesn't even involve Leidata Sfek. There's nothing to clarify. There is no Sfek here anymore, and therefore we wouldn't go. So based on that, they explain this difference in Rashi and Tosafot's view of the Mishnah as to what we're discussing in the Mishnah over here, why this institution was put in place. The Gemara will come up with two other reasons for why we put it on Wednesday and Thursday. One of them is because Shaktu, which is that we wanted to give 4 days to prepare for the wedding, which the Gemara will discuss over here. That seems to be a secondary reason as to why we have it on Wednesday, but would explain partly why we picked Wednesday instead of Sunday, which we'll see in the Gemara in a second. Thursday has to do with the fact that Thursday is the day that Hashem gives a bracha for Pru Urvu, and since that is a day of bracha for Pru Urvu, it's appropriate for Thursday. It involves two things. One is that the almanah gets married on Yom Chamishi, as well as Yom Shishi, which also involves a bracha of approval vote. And the Tula will get married on Wednesday and Thursday night, meaning that Wednesday night that goes into Thursday, so that'll be the bracha of Pru Revu. So for that reason, those days were picked. Again, Tosafot sees those as being secondary and almost irrelevant. They are, once we knew those were the days, they added on these additional reasons and explained it that way. But the core reason, according to Tosafot, is what's mentioned in our Mishnah, and has to do with the Batei Din. And for that reason, the Yom Chamishi for the Almanah has no reason. It's just simply they put the Yom Revi'i for the Betula, they made the Almanah Yom Chamishi to differentiate, not because there's any reason for Yom Chamishi. And again, just to establish the Chazal's Takana, they had to make it that there were days that were fixed for each individual, but there was no meaning behind the Yom Chamishi for the Almanah, according to the way that Tosafot views this. It happens to be that in the Middle Ages, most of the marriages actually took place on a Friday instead of other days of the week. You will find that most of the ketubot that are marked on Erev Shabbat. The marriage took place right before Shabbat. The reason for that was the extreme poverty that the people lived in. And on Shabbat, they were having a meal already, and they needed a sudat nisuin. They were able to kill two birds with one stone by having a single meal, both for the sudat nisuin and for Shabbat, and they didn't have to expend a lot of extra money. That led to this idea, or this thing that many people were getting married on Fridays. Alright, so now we move into the Gemara. Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Mipnei ma'amru betula nisei yom revi'i. So seemingly he's giving a reason. Why does betula get married on yom revi'i? Lefi shishaninu, because we have a Mishnah later on. Higiyaz man velo nisu. He reaches the time and he doesn't get married. And this is based on the fact that they used to have kiddushin or erusin a year before they had nisuin. In that year period, the husband gets ready with the house, the parnosa, and the woman takes care of her clothing and everything she's going to bring into the marriage, preparations for the marriage. When it hits the date, when he's supposed to get married, the 12-month date, if he doesn't marry on that date, ochlot mishalo, she's entitled to mizonot already from the husband, ochlot de truma. And if she is a bat yisrael to kohen, she can now start eating truma. Now truma is an entitlement even from the time of erusin, or the time of Kiddushin. We saw that already in Yevamot. The Chazal, where it's metakein, that she doesn't get it in Erusin or Kiddushin, because we're worried about Simpon, which is either that he's going to find something he doesn't like about the woman and he'll divorce her, or because she's going to take the stuff back to her father's house and eat it there, and then they'll eat from the Truma. But once it hits the point of Nisuin, then she's entitled. And if we cross over this line of Nisuin, then she is entitled to Truma. She was already entitled before, but the Chachamim didn't keep their Takana there, according to this part of the Mishnah. You would think if it fell out on a Sunday, the 12-month date, then he would give her mizunot. That's what we have here. So that means that the betula is married on Wednesday to show you that, this is what Rashi explains here, that even though technically his 12-month date fell out on a Sunday, he doesn't get penalized until he crosses over the Takanat Chazal on the Wednesday. Now, Tosafot over here says that the question is not the reason why she gets married on Wednesday. That's clearly not what the Gemara is asking over here, because it doesn't answer that question. That'll be the next series of questions in the Gemara. But he says here that the Gemara here is trying to find out, Elohachi perusho, mipnei ma amru. Why did they say this? My nafkamina shetiknu nisei perivi. What's the nafkamina that getting married on a Wednesday? That's the first question of the Gemara according to Tosafot, which is why or what halachic implications does it have that you get married on Wednesday? So here, Rav Yosef claims that the halachic ramifications are that if a 12-month period ended up on any other day of the week, he gets a bye until the Wednesday. Amar Rav Yosef. So this is Rav Yosef saying about himself. Remember, he's the quoter of this memra. Marid Avram, right, the master of Avram. And he's saying like a shvua to Hashem. Tali Tanya, but delo Tanya. You're connecting something that's written in the Mishnah to something that's not written in the Mishnah? And it's predicated on information that's not in the Mishnah? Where it says, hey Tanya, hey lo Tanya. Which one is in the Mishnah and which one is not found in the Mishnah? Which of these two situations is not found in the Mishnah? Hatanya vahatanya. Both of them are found in the Mishnah Yod. Our Mishnah is the Batei Dinim. And the Mishnah later on, the 12 months being up. Elatala Tanya de Mefarish Taima, but the Tanya de Lo Mefarish Taima. No, over here, the Mishnah explicitly tells you the reason. The Mishnah over there does not explicitly tell you the reason. And now you're trying to tell us that the reason for our Mishnah is that Mishnah over there. You're telling us something where it doesn't have a reason with something that does have a reason. Our Mishnah tells you the reason why it's on Yom Revi'i.
The Mishnah later on, after 12 months, doesn't tell you any reason over there. Rav Yosef says, I don't understand. You're saying that the reason for Yom Revi'i over here, seemingly, or why Yom Revi'i has any implications is because of the Mishnah over there. Our Mishnah explains what's going over here. It's backwards. Ela itmar hachi itmar. But if you say it, this is the way you should say it. Now, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, there's a machloket in the Girsa whether Rav Yosef's name is mentioned over here, and that might have to do with the nature of the question. Over here, Rav Yosef asked the question, but he was also the quoter. It says, Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, he's the quoter of the issue. So Rashi over here notes that either Rav Yosef is asking on his Rebbeim, Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, he's asking on his Rebbeim and say, what were they thinking? Or, this is a story about Rav Yosef, that Rav Yosef in middle through his life became very ill. He became ill and forgot all of his learning from earlier on. And he also lost his eyesight. And then after his illness, he relearns everything he learned before. Now they're quoting him something that he said before his illness. And he's asking, he goes, how could they ever say that? That makes no sense. And so Rav Yosef is actually challenging his own statement from before his illness. So depending on what is going on over here, who's speaking in the Gemara, that would determine whether Rav Yosef is in the Girsa or not. If it's Rav Yosef himself challenging his own perspective, then it would make no sense to add in Rav Yosef here because he's the speaker. If it's Rav Yosef challenging and then the Gemara intervening, then it should say, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Shmuel, I'm Rav Yosef again over here because they're changing or amending what the statement was. But because of those two reasons or those two explanations of why Rav Yosef argues over here, that has implications in terms of whether you have the girsa of Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Amar Yosef afterwards. So now this is what they should say. Mipnei ma amru betula niseit yom arvi. Why do we say that betula gets married on Wednesday? Shemayalo tanot betulim ayam mashkim nebeitim. Then he would get up immediately to go to beitim. Betina se bechad b'shabbat. Well then, why don't we get married on Sunday? Because then he could get to the beitin on Monday morning. Shemayalo tanot betulim ayam mashkim nebeitim. Here comes shaktu chachamim al takanot benot Yisrael. The Chachamim, in order to take care of the Benot Yisrael, ensured that there would be 3 days of preparation going into the wedding. So if the wedding is on Wednesday, Yom Revi'i, then you have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi, to prepare for the wedding. Now why is it Shaktu Chachamim Atchanat Benot Yisrael? Might have to do something we're going to see later on in the Gemara, which is that we wanted the husband to invest in the wedding. We want the husband to invest in the wedding because we want to have a disincentive for him to coming to court and just making a willy-nilly claim that she wasn't a betula. He comes to court and unwinds the whole marriage. We want him to have a vested interest in keeping the marriage together because he invested in the marriage. How did he invest in the marriage? He made the wedding. He had these 3 days. He put a lot of money and effort into the wedding. And therefore, that is Shaktu Chachamim Atchanat Benot Yisrael, that the Takana was in favor of the Benot Yisrael because the person is going to put the wedding together and invest so much money, then he's not going to just divorce the woman willy-nilly. And that's a protection for the Benot Yisrael. Echad b'Shabbat, v'sheni b'Shabbat, v'shlishi Shabbat is the preparation. Ubrevi konza, on Wednesday he marries her. V'chshav sheshaninu shaktu. And now that we learned out, shaktu is the reason, ota sheshaninu, that which we learned in the Mishnah later on. Higia zman v'lo niso, v'chlot mishalo, v'chlot b'tshuma, the fact that she gets rights to eat. Higia zman v'echad b'Shabbat, if it lands on a Sunday, since he can't marry her because of Takanat Chachamim, it's not his fault. The reason he can't marry on one Sunday is not because of him, it's because the Chachamim said he has to get married on Wednesday. Therefore he gets a bai. It's held in abeyance for 3 days until the Takanat Chachamim allows him to get married. If he doesn't get married on the Wednesday, then he'll be subject to the penalties that I have to pay for the mizonot. Lefikach. Based on that, we can come to the conclusion. Chalohu, if he got sick. Oshechaltehi, or she got sick. Or she was a nida. He doesn't give her mizonot. These are all cases of ones, which is that these individuals didn't get married, not because of any reason above themselves, but simply they were outside factors. Like he got sick, she got sick, she was pirsa nida. Now pirsa nida is interesting over here. This forms the position of the Rambam, as well as many of the Geonim, that a chupat nida is an invalid chupa. A woman cannot get married as a nida. Chupat nida is invalid. Most of the other Rishonim believe that a chupat nida is valid. They just can't consummate the marriage. And they have to have people there with them so they can't be alone together. But there is, chupat nida still is a valid chupa. But pirsa nida, according to the Rambam and those Geonim, really seems to be what the Gemara is saying over here, that it's an invalid marriage and they won't go through with the marriage. It's a case of ones. And because of that, they cannot get married. And if I extrapolate the din that I just learned here, that when it's not your fault, you don't have to pay mizonot. When there's a takanat chachamim, it's not your fault. You don't have to pay mizonot. So too in these instances, when it's not your fault, you don't have to pay mizonot. V'ika debayla mibay. Some people ask it or frame it as a question. Chalohu mahu. If he gets sick, what is the din? Hatam taimamai mishum de'anis. What's the reason over there in the case by the takanat chachamim that he's exempted from paying mizonot until the Wednesday is because it was out of his control. So to over here, he's out of his control. He got sick. Over there, it's an imposition of the chachamim on him. That's why he's exempted. But over here, it's his own onis, meaning that it's his problem. It wasn't an outside imposition on him. It's something that happened to him, and therefore he'll be culpable over here, and he'll have to pay mizonot from the Sunday if he got sick. If you want to say, chaluhu, malala mizonot. So again, we spoke about in the past that Rambam who says, once you do that, you've already made a determination over here that that's the case, that if he gets sick, malala mizonot, that's not called ones, because he became sick, and it's his problem. Chaltahi mahu, she becomes sick, now what's the din? Matzi Amarlo, can he say to her, Ana Hakaimna, I'm ready. I'm ready and waiting. You are the one who's causing us not to get married here. How can you claim that I need to pay mizonot when you are the one who's me'akev over here? Odilma, Matzi Amarlo, she could say to him, Nistachvasadeyu, you feel flooded. It's your bad luck. Your bad luck because I am your wife. And your bad mazel caused me to be ill, and it's your bad mazel that I'm unable to come into the marriage now, but you'll have to give me a mizonot. Vimtim salomar. So here again, the Gemara concludes, Amrale nistaf chasadeyu. That we say, yes, that the field is flooded, and it's your bad mazel that happened over here. Pirsa nida mahu. If she becomes a nida, then what's the din over there? Pishat vesta lo tibaylach. If it's on her normal cycle, there's no question that that's her issue. Not his issue. He can't claim it's his bad mazel because it's her normal cycle. So that's her issue. Over there you can't say it's your bad luck. What happens if she sees a dam or has a nidah sighting outside of her normal cycle? My, Kevin, since it wasn't on a normal cycle, she could say to him, listen, it's your bad luck. Otherwise this wouldn't have happened. Odilma came into Ika Neshe to Kamishanya Vastayu. Since there are women who sometimes have off-cycle sightings or spotting, Kashad Vesta Dami, and therefore it's like her normal cycle, and therefore she would be the one who is problematic over here and not him. Now Tosfot asks over here, why do we say it's his bad mazel and not her bad mazel? Why is everything blamed on him? So Tosfot says over here, Venu Cholditon da Adraba Mazla Garam. You can't say that it was her bad mazel. The Kaven to Mifkada Piriya Rivya. Since she doesn't have a mitzvah Piriya Rivya, Lomi Ansha, she's not punished by the delay. The problem is for him, not for her. Even though they are both coming into this wedding, for him, there might be an obligation to get married. Well, here it comes back to this question of whether there's a mitzvah Kiddushin, mitzvah Nisuin, only a mitzvah Pruravu. But over here, believing that there's a mitzvah Pruravu, that's an obligation on the man, and that obligation is being deferred, and that's why it's his bad mazel. For her, if it gets deferred, she doesn't have a mitzvah pruravu. Now, that is controversial, because first of all, there are some that believe that a woman does have a mitzvah pruravu. In addition to that, even Tosfot himself in other places suggests that maybe even if a woman doesn't have a mitzvah pruravu, she might have a mitzvah lo tohu v'ra'ah l'shevet yitzarah. There might be a more general mitzvah to procreate or fill the world, and therefore, the woman does have some obligation over here. But, given that, Tosfot says that it's the man's problem, not the woman's problem. But oh, he says, that the nature of the relationship between the man and the woman is that the woman becomes ishto ki gufo. And since ishto ki gufo, his mazel is what governs over here. On the other hand, bala ki gufa, that we don't say. Now, it's true that in certain instances, like by Chanukah candles, it's machloket, the Mishnah Berurah brings down that we do say it over there, that is actually a bilateral relationship, and that both parties have that meaning. Over here, Tosafot suggests that it's only in a single direction, that ishtoku gufo, and therefore, the nature of the relationship is what governs over here, and that's the mazel. Most of the Rishonim don't hold like Tosafot and say it's very simple. Who is the obligation on? The obligation is on the husband. So if there's a failure over here, whose bad mazel it is? Because he's the one who's obligated to pay. So if he's the one who's obligated to pay and it triggers the payment, then if he can't consummate the marriage and the payment goes into effect, whose bad luck is it? Whose bad mazel? It's the husband's bad mazel because he's the one who's under obligation. The woman is simply the recipient over here, and therefore there's no issue of mazel over here because it's a practical part of the relationship or the obligations that's on the husband, and that's how many of the Rishonim explain it, not as fundamental as what the Tosafot says, but more about the practical considerations over here of who the obligation is upon. So Poshit Rav Achai. Rav Achai brings a conclusion over here. Tosafot over here says, V'lo kamosh perish harashpam, dayna Rav Achai Gon. That this is Rav Achai Gon quoted in the Gemara. He says, what do you mean? Rav Achai Gon quoted in the Gemara, who wrote the Shiltot? He's quoted in the Gemara, how could it be? Now Tosafot says the reason it can't be this way is because Rav Ashi answers him. And Rav Achai Gon and Rav Ashi are not contemporaries. So if Rav Ashi's answering him, it's certainly not Rav Achai Gon. The truth is that others have a girsa that does not include Rav Ashi. If you don't have Rav Ashi in the girsa, then it might be problematic. There is a letter from Rav Shrira Gon, I think, that says that this was Rav Achai the Saburai, from the times of the Saburaim, who are the ones who write over the Gemaras, really at the closing of the Gemara of the Amoraim. And this Rav Achai is not Rav Achai in Amora, but rather a Rav Achai that is a Saburai. Right. But Tosafot thinks that he's part of the Amoraim, clear Amora, because of the way it fits in the Gemara here. So Pasha Rav Achai, Giazman, Velo Nisu. If the time comes and they do not get married, Ochlot Mishalov, Ochlot Betruma. The wording, according to the Gemara, is Lo Nasu Lo Tani. Doesn't say Lo Nasu, they did not get married, which would imply that it's from the Arusa's side, that he was not the one who did it. El Lo Nisu. They did not get married in the passive form, which is referring to the Arusa. So over here, Echidami, what's the case where the equal is from the side of the woman, and yet she's still getting to eat? If she's causing the problem, then why is she granted the right to eat? Why does she get the right to truma? Must be a case where she is an ones, and if she's an ones, then ki gavna, like the cases that we said above. And the Mishnah says she still granted those rights. So I'm Rav Ashi. That's who's where Tosafot says it can't be Rav Achai. I'm Rav Ashi. If it's a case of ones, then it is not her right to eat. And the ikov is from him. It should have said lo nasu, that the ikov is from the husband's side. But I did tani reisha, the Mishnah over there. And the Reisha talks about the woman, talks about rights of the woman, bididhi, tanami sefi bididhi. The Mishnah continues talking about from the woman's perspective or the woman's side. But not to say that it's only from the woman's side, not from the man's side, but it is from both parties in the latter half of that Mishnah, and the ikuv is from him. So Rav Ashi says you have no definitive proof from that Mishnah later on. Many ask about how does the Gemara know how to pronounce the word? The word is written, it has no nikudot in it. How do they know whether it's nasu or nisu? I mean, the Gemara here makes an assumption. I know it's Nisu, it's not Nasu. This is Torah Shebaal Peh without any Nikudot. How do they know? What you have to argue is that the Torah Shebaal Peh was passed down, and that was part of the Misora, was how to pronounce the word over there. And it was well known that that was the pronunciation that was in that case. Now, Rava comes along and says, Amar Rava, Ulin Inyan Gittin Eino Kein. Regards to a get, it's not like this. Well, not like this is not clear, because the Gemara just concluded that in terms of ones, it's not clear that there's an exemption over here. The Gemara left it, they didn't know what to do with it. And certainly by the woman, they didn't know what to do with it. So as Rashi points out, this goes back on the Lefikach. Earlier on, the Gemara said Lefikach. Therefore, based on the fact that when the Chachamim put in their Takana, he doesn't have to pay until Wednesday, even though he's supposed to get married on a Sunday. Therefore, we said that in cases of ones, there's some sort of unforeseen problem, then he doesn't have to pay. Rava says that's not true by Gittin. The cases of ones are not a tour by Gittin. So now, Alma Kasavar, must be that Rava holds ein ones by Gittin. There is no such thing as accidents or unforeseen problems by Gittin. Menale the Rava, huh? Where does Rava know this from? Ilei mamahadetzan, if he knows from the Mishnah, is a Gittich. Im lo bati mikan ve'ad shnei masar chodesh. Israel says, this is your get if I don't show up in the next 12 months. umeit betoch 12 chodesh, and he dies before the elapsing of the 12 months, ain't no get. Therefore, the get's not a good get. Mate, who? They no get. That's only by mates. Ha chala. If he got sick, or is a get. If the reason he couldn't show up was because he was sick, then it would have been a get. When he dies, it's not a get because you can't give a get after you're dead. But if he's alive and the reason he didn't show up is because he got sick, we would have let the get go through. Even though the reason he's not showing up is not because of something that was in his control. He got sick, he got ill. It says, that when he gets sick, it's also not a get. And that's exactly what this mission is teaching you. It's coming to teach you that there is no get after he dies, to teach you that principle, ain't get achar mitah. Ain't get achar mitah, hatan alei reisha. What do you mean? That there's no get after mitah is already in the first part of that Mishnah. Hare ze gitech imeti. This is your get if I die. Hare ze gitech michol izeh. This is your get if I die from this sickness. Hare ze gitech lachar mitah. This is your get after death. Lo amar klom. Over there, he didn't say anything because all those gitim go into effect after he's dead. So you can't have get lachar mitah. I don't need a second half of a Mishnah to tell me the same thing. Dilma lafuke mid rabuteinu. Maybe it's coming to exclude rabuteinu, detanya. Rabuteinu hitirua liinasei. No, that the Rabuteinu say that she is allowed to get married. Raminan man Rabuteinu. Who are these Rabuteinu that say that she can't get married when supposedly the get is effective after mitah? I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Beit Din Desharu Mishka. It's that Beit Din that allowed oil to be mutar. This is oil of an akum, and that they were not gozer, or they unwound the gzerah with shemen akum. So that Beit Din. Now who that Beit Din is? Some say that it was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Most believe that it was Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya was the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. He was part of that Beit Din. And they are allowing these gitin to go through. Why? Savri like Rabbi Yossi. They hold like Rabbi Yossi. Damar zmano shel shtar mochiach alav. The dating of the shtar has impact over here. Why date the get as of today if it's not going to be effective until the achar mitah? The answer is that the date must have bearing. What does the date have to bearing? It is if you said mi'achshav. Putting the date in the get is as if you said it's effective today if the condition is fulfilled. If I die, then it's effective for today. And that's why they say the get is effective. Ela miseifa, which says, mi'achshav, im lo bati bikat ve'ed chodesh umeit v'toch shnei mazar chodesh is a get. If he frames the get this way and says the get is effective from now, if I don't come within 12 months, then if he dies within that 12-month period, it's a good get. Mate, v'udin l'chala. That's if he dies, and it's the same if he got sick.
Just like you suggested in the Reisha, and therefore irrespective of the reason why he did not return, the get is considered valid. That doesn't matter if the lack of his ability to return is because he died, or because he became ill, which is a case of onus. And therefore you would see from this that onus has no impact on gitin.
So Gemara says, no, maybe Dilma mate davka, maybe mate only. Because the reason he gives a get in that case is to protect her from Yibum. But if he got sick, maybe he wouldn't want the get to go through because he's still alive and he's not protecting her from Yibum. So maybe it is davka mate and not mate vichala. That is in both of those instances. So therefore, it might be differentiated. So again, from that Mishnah, we can't prove anything. And everyone says, mita is not a good get. From there we were worried about the fact that maybe we pass in like Rabuteinu, who say that that is a good get. So that Mishnah comes to exclude them. The next case, which talks about mate versus chala, getting sick. Over there, we thought that was a source for Rava, that sickness would be different. The Gemara says, no, mate and sickness are the same, but they're coming to undermine the Rabuteinu. That's why they have two statements. No get lachar mitah, plus no get lachar mitah, even when it's dated before the mitah. And then we have the last statement of the Mishnah that says, Me'achshav, if he uses the terminology me'achshav, then ad yubet chodesh, umeit, and he dies and he's not going to come back, then that's a get. If you say mate and chala, sickness again, that shows you that when you get sick, there is no ones by gitin. Gemara says, no, you don't have to say that it is the case of sickness and death are the same. Because over here, there's a reason to differentiate between death and sickness, because death, he might have more reason to want the get to go through than by the case of sickness. Elamiha, we have to say the source for Rava is from here. He says, I don't come back within 30 days. This get goes into effect. He comes back at the end of 30 days. And the ferry wasn't working or the bridge was down because there was some sort of flooding. He's standing on the other side of the river and scream, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. Don't let my wife get divorced. I'm a Shmuel, Lav Shmei Matyo. He didn't make it to the city. He didn't get there. He is out of luck. That's not coming. That's not coming back. And the get goes through. So you see from that, that even in the case of something that was out of his control, nevertheless, the get goes through. So there's no such thing as onus by Gitin. The Dilma Unsu de Shchiach Shaini. Maybe by cases that are common, it's different. Because if he thinks that he should have known about or foreseen, he should have put a condition in his condition to that. And he didn't do that. So it's really his own problem. He's a posheya here. The bridges flood sometimes and it washes away the bridge. The ferries don't work sometimes. He should have foreseen that fact and put that as part of the condition. The fact that he didn't do that makes it no longer that he is in onus. He is a person who is not foreseeing the future, and it was his problem. It was something that he should have dealt with. Ela Rava Svara de Nafshei Kamar. Rava is giving his own reason over here. Mishum Tznuot or Mishum Prutzot. The problem or the reason that he establishes it because they have different women, and these different women are going to run into problems, which is Mishum Tznuot, because of those that are Tznua, Tiamat Lo Lahavi Get. If you say that it's not a get, zimlin deloanis. There's sometimes he was definitely not an ones. Visvara sabradanis, and she thinks there is an ones over here, and because of that, she won't get married. Umianga, and she'll be left. Mianga viyatva. She'll sit around forever thinking that the get was not effective because the reason he didn't come back was because there was some sort of unforeseen incident, and that's why he didn't come back. And she'll say my get maybe isn't effective, and she'll be left in aguna. Mishum prutzot, tiamar lo lahavi gita. If you say it won't be a get in this case, zimnin de anis. Sometimes there really is a case where it's onus. Va'amra lo anis, and she will say, no, it wasn't. Va'azam insiba, and then she'll go and get married, and she'll say, look, I got my get. The guy didn't show up. That's it. It's my get. V'nimtza get batel banam amzerim. And then when the husband shows up and gives us the information and shows that he really was a case where it was onus, then what are we going to do? All of a sudden now she's in a mamzerot relationship. She has to divorce both husbands. We don't want that outcome. So Rava says that we have problems if we allow this case of unforeseen incidents to impact the get. We're also going to have from that unforeseen problems. And we don't want those unforeseen problems. So basically what we said is, the cases of ones will not affect at all. Ones will not be any impact in Gitin in order to preserve Gitin. And by preserving Gitin, then we'll know either she is divorced or she isn't divorced. The cases of ones will not play any role over here. And since they don't play any role, we're just going to look. Did he come? Did he not come? Did he fulfill the Tanai? Did he not fulfill the Tanai? And therefore the women will be released or not released based on the information that we have. Okay, we're going to stop here. Four lines down on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph.